Welcome to ByteWise, the podcast where technology meets risk management. And now, introducing the hosts, Daniela Parker, with a background in risk management and a passion for making risk-aware decisions. Next, Glenn Sorensen, a veteran in cybersecurity and supporting while protecting. And last but not least, Brian Talon, the technology whiz who's a master of collaboration. Ever wondered how blockchain's potential weighs against its pitfalls? Or how AI's advancements align with ethical considerations? Whether listeners are tech aficionados looking to view challenges through a risk lens or risk professionals seeking clarity in the digital maze, ByteWise has them covered. Dive in as the trio decodes, discusses, and demystifies the intertwined realms of technology and risk. Tune into ByteWise, where technology and risk converge with clarity and insight.
All right, and we're back for another episode of ByteWise. Hello, Brian and Glenn. It is wonderful to be back, and I'm super excited because we're talking about a topic that is near and dear to my heart, which is vendor management. So vendor management, as a risk manager, I had vendor management under me, and I still do, for quite a number of years. And there's a lot of different names for vendor management. We call it vendor risk management, third-party risk management. Some people refer to it as just VM, VDD, vendor due diligence is kind of used in the same terminology. But there's a ton of terms for vendor management. But I think the first thing we probably need to say is that I can't think of a lot of organizations that don't rely on some sort of a third party in order to conduct business. I thought about it. I can't come up with one, right? Like from your internet provider to, you know, all the other third parties that we rely on. So we think this may be worth a couple of extra episodes because it's such a big topic. But what we're going to talk about a little bit today is really like the why, right? Why we need to be doing vendor management. What vendor management tells us, what it doesn't tell us, and really touch upon the types of risks that we're trying to mitigate with vendor management. But first off, vendor management has a bad reputation in a lot of organizations. And it's almost like business continuity. when you say vendor management, people are like, oh, here we go again, here to slow me down, here to tell me.
It's that boring thing that's going to get in my way.
Yes. Yes. Right. And we've all had, well, I don't know about we've all, but I have had so many experiences where people are like, well, hey, here, I signed this contract. I figured you would need to know on the vendor management side. And you're sitting there like, thanks a lot for the heads up. So,
well, you know, now we've missed the boat on the way that we might protect ourselves.
Right. So I know everyone in our space has stories to share about that. And it's not just because for me, like I didn't conduct the vendor due diligence, but also in IT and in InfoSec, right? Like you guys didn't get input. You guys didn't know what's coming your way. Is it even like, is it going to work? Is it going to, you know, what is it going to do? So the age old, hey, I signed this contract, right? So let's talk a little bit about why we think we need to do vendor risk management, whatever you want to call it. Brian, thoughts from you?
Well, I think it's totally misunderstood, actually, because as often as you hear, you know, we need to do vendor due diligence, and I've signed the contract, and you probably should know about this vendor. I've seen and heard, yeah, we've signed the contract, now do the vendor due diligence, will you? Right?
Yeah.
And you know, of course, by the time the contract is signed, you've lost, you know, every opportunity to protect yourself from a vendor who may or may not be challenged in the future. You're linking yourself to this vendor, whether you know it or not, you're linking yourself to this vendor. Mm-hmm. And if they have problems, you have problems.
Yep. Glenn, for the InfoSec folks.
Well, I think there's a couple of things there, but there's the vendor themselves, and you know, what's the risk of the organization as a partner? Are they financially stable? Are they doing some basic security things that you would expect? There's that side of it, but then there's the solution providers too, that may be building something that you intend to use maybe very heavily or rely very heavily on in your organization. And how is that? Like, what did they do there? Is that done securely, or at least in a risk managed way? And there's a lot of questions to ask around that. And there's a lot of dependence that is often not understood in the business that well. How much data am I sending to a vendor? What are we doing with what they're building for us? What's really going on there? And it takes some effort to get to the bottom of that.
Yeah, because you mentioned solution. Like, one thing that is one of my observations all the time is that, so someone went to a conference, saw a really cool tool, and said, we got to have it. And that's then how we end up with the, hey, I signed a contract. But the other thing I see is that we bring a vendor to the table and we have no idea what the problem is that we're trying to solve. We just think that whatever the vendor's doing is really cool and it looks really good and everybody seems to want it right now. So, you know, why not? The solution is like, we have the solution before we even know what the problem is. And then when it comes to implementation, is when we find out that, well, maybe this wasn't it, right?
A show-me solution that you have to go in search of the problem.
Right, right.
Evolve.
And a good vendor management program, and when I say a good one, like a holistic vendor management program, will actually pick up on that, but we're going to talk about that one a little bit later. So for me, coming from the financial services industry, the number one reason, and that's really, okay, I shouldn't say the number one reason, but the basic reason for us to do vendor management is because it's a regulatory requirement, right? In the financial services space, we have to do vendor risk management. We have to know who we're doing business with. It has to be based on the risk that the vendor brings to the organization. It has to be done in, you know, a certain frequency. And the guidance really walks you through exactly what you need to be looking at. And when we're looking at vendor risk, what I see everywhere right now is the cyber piece, right? Like, the third parties are causing issues. But before we dive into that, I really want to talk a little bit about the other risks that you have to consider when you're bringing vendors on. And while that may be in the back of everybody's mind, or maybe it's not, I don't know. But we often forget about the fact that when we engage with third parties, our reputation is definitely on the line. Even if they're in the background, right? Every vendor we engage with can cause us to experience problems that will ultimately damage our reputation.
Yeah, I would say, especially if your service and your brand is forward in all of that, which is going to be a lot of the time, you're providing online banking, but are, you know, putting your label on someone else's service and someone else's platform. If something goes wrong with theirs, whether it's a breach or downtime or whatever, it's you that's reflected. That's your reputation, not necessarily theirs.
That one's hit the news lately, Glenn. I bet you, you know, not too many of our readers have ever heard of Infosys McCamish. That's a name that most of us don't know, but we've all heard of the Bank of America breach that happened a few weeks ago. And, Bank of America's taken it on the chin. But the vendor that actually lost the data, Infosys McCamish, is buried somewhere in the article.
Yeah, because it's Bank of America, right? And for me, like, if I'm a client somewhere, I don't really care why you're having a problem. You're having a problem. Yeah. And it's as basic as people in your, like, if you have a third-party call center, they answer the phone with your organization's name usually, right? That's right there is reputational risk, right? When your customer has a crappy experience because of a third-party call center, that's your name right there. Right? It's as basic as that. But to your point, Brian, people generally don't care if there was a third party involved or not.
They don't.
At the end of the day, I mean, you are managing that relationship with your vendor and you are putting your brand, your reputation, your name on their service.
Yeah. And that's something that we always have to consider. And it's tough, especially when you're in smaller organizations where, you know, ideally you want to have 100% control over everything, but that's just not feasible because we don't have the bottomless bucket of money, right? So you have to rely on third parties. And the smaller you are, the more dependency you probably have because you cannot build things in-house. You have to outsource for, you know, call center volumes or, you know, depends, whatever scenario, but you are relying and you're handing over your reputation to a third party. So I think the reputational risk is oftentimes underestimated, I'm going to say.
Yeah, and sometimes just overlooked outright, but...
Yeah, right. So then next up for me, always the operational risk, like business continuity, right? It's back to if your third party has a problem, that impacts you, right? If they have a business continuity problem, if they have a disruption, that's your risk. Like you own the risk. You can outsource the service. You can maybe transfer a little bit of the risk in a contract or with insurance. But outside of that, you still own that operational risk that you have when you rely on third parties. And probably one of my nightmare stories from that is when I experienced a third party RDC provider go down. And it was because someone had, the sheriff had basically repoed their servers. I know. And they were shut down. And they were down for 2 weeks.
And RDC is remote deposit capture.
Thank you. Right? So. The acronyms. Yeah, here we go with the acronyms.
Yes.
Again, right? So 2 weeks of downtime on that. And it was a big impact to the organization. It was expensive. You had to pull people off of their daily jobs to kind of help figure out what's going on. And it was, again, right? Like, it was such a big impact to a lot of their clients. But what are you going to do? What are you going to do? There's nothing you can do if your third party goes down. You're going to go knock on their door, be like, can I help? Like, do you need help with anything? But when they're down, you're down. When your internet goes down, that's it, right? We have a lot of, again, coming from the financial services side, a lot of processes that we have do not work in paper anymore. You know, when you're going through downtime, backup processes, the whole paper thing only gets you so far. So operational risks, vendors will introduce those to your environment.
In a lot of ways, in a lot of ways you may not expect if you don't understand what your vendor is doing for you.
Right. Then the other one that's a big one for me is the strategic risk, right? And strategic risk is a term that is a little squishy, right? Like what is actually strategic risk? But one of the questions, I have three questions I ask when it comes to strategic risk. Are your strategies aligned with your goals? What are the risks that the strategies bring to the organization? And what are the risks to the strategies? And you can tie all that back to your third parties, right? A, if you're onboarding third parties, that's back to, do you understand what the problem is you're trying to solve? If you're bringing on third parties that are like not aligned with what you're trying to do, that's a waste of your money. And you're taking on a lot of risk, right? But the third parties, if you rely heavily on third parties, say you have a digital type strategy, if you rely heavily on third parties, that's a problem, right? It can totally derail your strategy when you're having a problem with that third party. And unfortunately, that happens, right? The core conversions are probably a good example for that, right? If you're going through a core conversion, that is a huge reliance on a third party. It's usually part of a strategy. You want to be more efficient. You want to have better capabilities, right? But you're relying most of the time on a third party to help you through that stuff. That's a big one.
Yeah, and the core conversion in our world is, you know, whatever the main system is that a business uses to stay in business. Could be an ERP system, a CRM system, a sales system, whatever main systems you're converting.
Yep. That's a good one. I need help translating sometimes.
No worries.
As do we all.
Yeah.
It's the translating. And then your financial risk, right? As an organization, when sometimes you're named in a lawsuit with your third party, right? Sometimes the third party, I've seen this in the compliance space. I believe it was also Bank of America that got in trouble because they relied on a third party to process something in the mortgage arena that was a compliance issue where they didn't do it correctly. And then Bank of America was on the hook for it, right? So that will cost you a lot of money. And there's only so much you're going to be able to transfer over to that vendor because a lot of times they protect themselves in the contract space, right? Limiting their liability. So while, again, when you look at the headlines and when you read about vendors, it's usually the cyber piece that comes up. I can't stress enough that there's other things to consider. And probably the one that I keep a close eye on is on the business continuity side, right? Because again, you're relying on a lot of third parties to keep your business running. And how do you, you know, how are you prepared? And a lot of times that ends up being you have to have your own backup process or something in place. You can't really rely on the vendor at that point in time.
And that's huge. You may even have SLAs built into the contract, but have you analyzed on your side how long you can go without their service or what the impact is over a period of time? If they're down for a few minutes, okay, then maybe that's not a big deal. If they're down for an hour or a day or a week, what is that impact? And how do you handle it? Can you handle it?
And does your contract SLA line up with your recovery time objective for that process? Because I've seen that too. And I'm laughing because I've seen, you know, quite a few deltas in there where your recovery time objective is maybe 4 hours, but your contract says that they're giving you 24 hours on that side. So does everything align, right? And if it doesn't, what are you going to do? You're going to have to be okay with it until contract renewal time rolls around. So,
and just for the audience's benefit, we're totally queuing up a contract episode here in the future because this is huge.
Yeah, it's big. It is really big. And now again, with all the notification requirements that are popping up and we're moving into the cyber piece now, right? Like there's a lot of different notification requirements coming down from regulators in financial services in particular. If your contract doesn't align with that, you're kind of SOL on that one, you know, sticking with the acronyms and, here.
Yeah. And we'll leave that for the reader to look up.
Yeah. And if you're approaching this from the vendor side too, maybe you're providing a service to larger organizations. If you're a smaller tech startup and you have a large financial institution or, you know, healthcare organization that you're looking to have become your customer, they have requirements too. And in their default contract language, they're going to say something like, we want you to report breaches or serious incidents to us in 24 or 48 hours. Can you do that?
Well,
analyze your contracts.
That's the million-dollar question anyways. Like, you know, some of these timelines are super tight. Can you actually do that?
And as an experienced incident responder, in 24 or 48 hours, you often are still trying to figure out which way is up.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of uncertainty there.
Well, and Iman, that's where you need to rely on your... I'm personally going to say this. This is where you're going to need to rely on your fellow risk management folks to help out with some of that, right? While you're trying to figure out what's up and down. That makes sense there. So let's talk about the cyber piece to this, right? The information security piece on the vendor side. Huge. Huge. Glenn?
Yeah. And it still all comes back to knowing what you're doing with your vendors. And as we've kind of all experienced here, there's a process you go through to evaluate the vendor, but does it get deep enough to really understand how much data you're sending? I mean, we've experienced things too, where there was a process and relationship with a vendor that, you know, existed before we were involved. And, you know, the practice was just send data to the vendor for, you know, doing whatever thing they do. Well, what is that data? Is it sensitive? Is it regulated? Is it PII? Do we have obligations that go into that should they lose it? Are there any other options? Can they work on it in our environment? Can we pare that data down to the point where it's not PII or not regulated anymore? There's a lot of things that you can do when you really dive into what exactly are the needs here. What is the service you're trying to accomplish? What are you trying to do for your customers? What are you trying to do for your organization? And getting deeply enough lets you actually answer those questions and do the right thing about it. And the right thing may be, hey, you know what? We're just willing to accept a little bit of risk. And that's fine as long as it's conscious.
And just to make it clear, these questions just all happen before contract signing. I just want to point that out.
All before contract signing. Because when you start to answer some of those, you can then start to negotiate that into the contract, which if you don't know that beforehand, obviously you can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to further, I mean, we're queuing up our contract episode that we have coming up, but we've talked about Bank of America twice in this episode so far, and they've had their share of problems, and I'm quite sure they've done a lot of vendor due diligence. I'm quite sure, you know, an organization that size has a pretty thorough vendor due diligence, but contract's the only thing that protects you. There's nothing else protects you. You see, even with their level of vendor due diligence, they still have problems. Yeah, those problems are going to occur, and the contract is the only thing you can go back on. Yeah.
And that's a great point, because I want to make clear, just because you do vendor due diligence, and to your point, I'm sure as a large financial institution, they have probably a few hundred people in that department, and I'm only a little bit jealous, but I am sure they do a lot and they follow the process. But while I still believe vendor management is 100% a necessity, the one thing I want to point out is that it's not going to solve all the world's problems for you.
It's still just managing risk. Mm-hmm. The risk is still there. There are still risks that, I mean, you can't mitigate all the risk to, you know, the level you would like, short of no longer doing business with anything and, you know, finding a cave in the mountains somewhere.
Also a good point, because, you know, let's keep in mind, we're not here to shut everything down, right? Like for me, it's always like, how do we get to a yes? And I apply that in a lot of areas, and in particular vendor management, right? There's a lot of things that, again, the smaller the organization, the more you're going to rely on third parties. And the intent is always to get to a yes, but I want to at least have the opportunity to get to a yes before someone tells me, well, we already went to the yes, and now we're going to let you know that we did that, and you need to just rubber stamp everything, which is probably one of my pet peeves, is when people come to me and say, so we signed this contract and we need you to do the due diligence. And then I'm just angry. I'll admit it. And maybe my face may even say it, but...
So now we're locked into this risk,
right?
And you can still do your due diligence and measure the risk, but there's really just nothing you can do about it at that point. And,
right. You know. And I mean, I'll do the due diligence just because, again, it's a regulatory requirement, right? But it's kind of a waste of time at that point.
You're relying on good grace with, you know, things that the vendor will then, you know, agree to after the fact.
Right.
Or, you know, whoever is on the other side of this contract, I mean, they've got the upper hand in every way that they want at that point, if you've just signed the contract without going through it and understanding it and aligning it, make sure it makes sense.
We all know when a vendor does have a problem, when any organization has a problem, they jump to who's going to solve the problem for me. That's probably number one. Number two is probably a call to their lawyer, right? Or their lawyers. And, you know, what liability do I have here? And number three is probably right straight to PR. So they have attorneys, and they have attorneys for a reason. And it's going to be to scour those contracts and look for a way out of owning the problem.
And again, right, the smaller you are, the more of a problem that is going to be for you, right? If you're dealing with a large third party, to your point, Brian, they have attorneys, right? A lot of times the contracts are written in a way that we're going to give you 1 month of your expenses if something happens, right? So a lot of times that's what you see, right? And so the point then is, if you don't have the opportunity prior to contract signing to even bring this up, right, to say to the organization, listen, this is a huge vendor for us. If something happens, the most we're ever going to get from them is X. Are we okay with that? But then the flip side to that is, and I hear that a lot, and, you know, I'm familiar with that. When you're a smaller organization, negotiating with vendors is really, really
it's
tough.
Hard. I work with a handful of tech startups and have over the years, and, you know, small tech startup, maybe 20 people, when they're looking at AWS or Microsoft Azure for hosting and signing the contract, and a lot of times the signing the contract is really just like clicking a box, but you don't have room to negotiate there. Like you don't negotiate with the giants that way. You accept the terms they give you, or you find something else if there is something else.
And you probably need to calculate that into the cost of doing business with that vendor, because you need to prepare internally for what could happen.
Yeah. And I mean, tech startup world is different, and the folks that go into that know they're operating at a higher level of risk, and it's a high risk, high reward sort of situation. They have a good idea of what they're getting into, for the most part, but I mean, they know their protections are limited in those cases. And, you know, maybe as they grow or things change, then there's an opportunity to do that with, to renegotiate or to get better terms in some ways with others. But, you know, Microsoft, AWS, you don't have a speck of weight to throw around there.
Nope, not really. And, you know, like we talked about before, they also experience issues sometimes. It does happen.
Yep. I mean, they, Microsoft and Google and Amazon are the best in the world at running data centers, at keeping infrastructure up, and they're still not perfect. They still have outages from time to time. Things go wrong. And if you're reliant on some of those services to provide services to your customers, you have to account for that.
Yeah. And I have to say that one of the challenges with the vendor management piece is that when I work in the business continuity portion of my job, it's easier for me to get buy-in from the organization for some odd reason than it is with vendor management. It's still hard, but vendor management seems to be, I hear a lot of words like overkill, too much. Why? There comes Daniela again. I think that on the vendor side, and I'm not quite sure yet why that is, but on the business continuity side, it's maybe because people still think business continuity is all about the weather events only. And they experience them themselves. I don't know what the disconnect is there, but I can share that usually the vendor management piece, it's harder to get buy-in than other risk management areas.
I think there's a perception around it that's just like, it's this kind of boring thing. It's a little bit hand-wavy. Maybe they don't really understand, you know, what's going on and why. But I mean, there's a reason that we do it and that we need to do it, right?
Well, and you also deal with salespeople, right? So that's another thing to keep in mind, is that when we're dealing with our internal clients, like the first line for me, they're only talking to the salespeople. And obviously salespeople are salespeople for a reason. And
they're convincing.
Yes.
They specialize in building trust.
Yes, exactly. And they're trained in that. And so if you're going into it and you're not like the forever critical, like we are, right? Well, we're always like, well, but wait a minute, what about this? And what if this happens? And what about this? And if you don't approach it with that mindset, then you're not going to ask those questions. And the salespeople are just going to tell you the benefits if they're good salespeople.
And I don't want to disparage salespeople here at all, because I think they largely perform a needed service, and a lot of things wouldn't happen without sales. But their motivations are to close the deal.
Yep.
And it's part of their job.
Yep.
And usually it's, you know, it's okay, the deal is closed. Now I hand that off to the people who deliver the service. And then I go on and I sell this thing to someone else. So there's not necessarily the long-term investment there. So if you just look at the motivations there and understand that a little bit, that can help you in, you know, understanding where people are coming from and what may or may not be coming out of a conversation. Yep.
So I think we talked quite a bit about like why we need to have some sort of a vendor management approach in place. And we are at time. And next episode, we're actually going to dive into the vendor due diligence process, right? Like, what are the things that we want to look at when it comes to doing business with a third party? What do they actually mean? Why are we looking at them? And how does that apply to like the AWSs and maybe the startups, you know, like the different types of vendors that you work with? So thanks again for listening. And we hope we will see you back in 2 weeks when we are going to go into much more detail on the vendor due diligence process. Thank you and have a good one.
Thank you for joining us on Bitewise today. As we wrap up, we're reminded of the ever-evolving world of technology and its intricate dance with risk. Whether you're diving deep into code or dissecting risk scenarios, remember to always bridge understanding with insight. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and keep tuning into Bitewise.